Hello, and welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club or common reading program for geek culture. Each episode, we select a topic that to discuss, I typoed. Let's try this again. Each episode, we select a topic to discuss from their own... I fucked this up super hard.
All right. Third time's the charm.
Each episode, we select a topic that people discuss from their own geeky, nerdy perspectives. Now, this is a new format that we are launching just now, right now. Heard it first, because nobody else is saying it.
Wow.
This is a versus episode. Rather than four representatives relating domains to a single topic, we only have three people, two of whom will go head-to-head, fighting over whose domain is better. After they each make the case for their domain, they will launch into a lengthy debate, of which I will be the referee. When it's all over, I will name the victor of this intense and bloody affair. Joining me this episode are...
Me! I'm back! It's gonna be me. I'm Austin, and today I'm gonna be repping The Elder Scrolls IV, Oblivion.
And it's me, Kenan, and I will be representing Elder Scrolls V, Skyrim.
And I'm your host, Colin Ketchin. We are going to be discussing these games through the lenses of their presentation, their interaction, and their imagination. Their presentation would be graphics, audio, interface. Interaction is like gameplay and activities. Imagination is the story, the lore, the characters, and the themes. And now I will let them loose in this bloody arena.
You came to watch a fight, and a fight you shall have!
And Blue Team may go back to lick their wounds as we decide which game is better.
That's number one.
That's number one?
Arena.
Arena.
The Elder Scrolls.
That's what I said. Go back and lick your wounds, like the Blue Team. Go back and get your rest. You've earned it. I thought I was doing
it's
a thing. My bad.
No, it's okay.
I'm wrong.
It's fine.
It just wasn't funny. It's okay.
It's okay. I want to say up front, I've played both these games extensively. I love them both, but I honestly don't have a rock-solid opinion on which game I prefer, so I'm looking forward to being persuaded by our representatives. If you are both ready to go, we may begin. Austin, are you ready?
I mean, I guess...
Kenan, how ready are you?
Good. In fact, so ready. I'm ready for both eventualities, which is either A, thank you, Colin, I really believe in your position, or B, Colin, you clearly like Oblivion better. I don't believe that I can possibly win with this biased judge.
Austin, do you feel that you are climbing a similar mountain, a throat of the world, if you would? Am I the High Hrothgar on your way to Parthenax?
You're a nerd.
It's okay.
I mean, no. I feel like it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not that stressed.
But Jeffrey, just so you know, Mr. Editor in the Sky, who's not here right now, you know which one to use.
Also, for Mr. Jeffrey in the Sky, remember that earlier in the recording when we were talking about how we should structure this podcast, Kenan uttered the phrase, I agree with Austin. So you can just drop that in anywhere.
All right, on that note, knowing that there is no way this will be an unbiased or fair debate, let's begin. Now begins our first summary, led by Austin Liebers, discussing The Elder Scrolls IV, Oblivion. Let's hear a little bit about your domain, why you like it, maybe how much you've played it, where you're from, a fun fact, where you see yourself in 5 years, family troubles that you find are the most prominent in your life, and whether you are a cat or a dog person.
I don't know. I think cats and dogs each have their upsides and downsides. In 5 years... I think, so this is going to take some time, we got to back up to like spring semester.
Sure.
I think I'm going to be working as an adjunct in some college in the Midwest. I'm going to be fired for racism against white people because I'm working at a college out in the Midwest.
Okay.
And I'm going to start a slow, steady, downward spiral. And I'm not sure where I'm going to end up in the fall. Anyway, so that's that one. Also, Oblivion. The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, in my opinion, is like one of the classic Western RPGs, action RPGs, I guess, technically, because it's not like a dungeon-crawling bonanza or anything.
Dungeon-crawling bonanza.
Yeah.
I've just never heard a dungeon crawler described as a bonanza, but okay.
On Sunday, Sunday, Sunday!
It's like a bonanza of death. Anywho, so it takes place in Cyrodiil, a region in the center of the continent of Tamriel, in which all of the Elder Scrolls games take place. You can play this game as any number of, like, fictional fantasy races and things. It's all crazy. You got different people, you got lizard people, you got cat people, you got people people, you got other people people, you got orcs, elves, and,
Yeah, people, people, other people, people.
Well, yeah, you've got the Nords and the Red Guards and the Imperials. Those are all the people, people.
Those are the people, people.
Yeah.
Austin, you would be really, really welcome in Skyrim. The Nords, the Red Guards, and Imperials, only real people.
Well, I mean, they consider themselves different because that's why they're not any of the Myr, like the Altmyr and the Dunmyr and the Dwemer.
Myr.
And the Orsamyr.
Myr, myr, myr.
At the beginning of the game, you get to choose what kind of character you're going to play. You get to do some character customization, whatever. You start out in this jail cell.
And then Captain Picard comes to save you.
I thought that was him.
This is the 27th of Last Seed, the year of Akatosh 433.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise.
Well, not quite. It's actually Captain Picard playing the role of Uriel Septim the Seventh.
Urethral, never mind.
Yeah, King Urethral Septim, Septim Piercing. Anyway, the King of Cyrodiil and technically all of Tamriel, kind of.
I think he's an emperor.
Some mildly complicated politics that we don't need to get into. He comes down into the dungeon because apparently in your cell there is a secret passageway that he needs to get out to escape from some cultists slash assassins who are trying to kill him, and you're just sitting here like, hey, Uriel, what's going on? And he's like, why are you in here? And you're saying, I don't know, I just began the game. And then he goes, cool.
And then he looks at you and says, these are the voyages.
The guards say, don't follow us, and then you proceed to follow them, and they're really cool about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, what are they gonna do? They've got more important shit to worry about, like demon summoning assassins.
I'm just saying, they kept threatening to kill me, and then, like, they didn't kill me, and I was like, ah, no wonder all the Emperor's sons have been killed.
Fair enough.
I swear, we'll kill you, bro. Oh, God!
As you venture out into the world, following these royal people, everyone gets killed. The main quest of Oblivion involves fighting, essentially, these demon cultists. Well, Daedric cultists. I'm sorry. We're in Elder Scrolls.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying. Our audience would be very lost if you did not correct a demonic to Daedric.
Anywho, you're fighting the cultists of Mehrunes Dagon, the Daedric Prince. That's enough D's and A's for a while. So you venture around Cyrodiil, which is this...
It's a pretty country.
It's a very pretty country.
Sunsets in, like, Cyrodiil, just south of the Imperial City, that stupid fork in the road where there's always a damn Minotaur next to the inn. Yeah. After I kill the Minotaur, I like to watch the sunset.
Minotaurs are people too, you murderer?
No, they're not one of the people that we talked about. There are no Minotaur people, just cat people, 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 other people, people, and orc people.
That's right!
Minotaurs are to be killed on sight.
We're very accepting.
But anywho, so you get to explore this world, meet lots of different characters, join different sorts of guilds and groups, packs of people, among other things that we can talk about later. And you defeat something of a devil.
Mr. Dagon.
In the end, if you don't give up, yeah. There are lots of quests to get lost in, and that's really what I liked about the game, was that there were so many different side quests that you
And I actually wanted to ask you real quick about all the side quests and factions in Oblivion. Whenever I talk to you about this game, that always seems to be the thing you talk about more than the main quest. I guess if you had to, like, pick a favorite quest line or favorite moment in Oblivion, when you play that game, what's the thing you go to do?
So I've done a couple playthroughs of Oblivion, and I've tried to make them, like, different. Mm-hmm. But the first time I played through it, I joined the Mages Guild, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm a dirty fucking wizard boy.
That's true.
And that's all I ever want to play on my first playthrough of anything.
You magical hussy.
But so I joined the Mages Guild, and then I didn't go through the entire Mages Guild because I was like, oh, whatever. I'm technically in wizard school, so, like, I've got time.
I'm at college. I got time, man.
Yeah, I don't need to plan my future yet.
And then you went out to a province Midwest, and you're going to get fired from the Mages Guild for being racist against people.
But anywho, yeah, so the Dark Brotherhood questline, I think, is the best mm-hmm. of most things.
Yeah.
Like, most phenomena.
And for the listeners who haven't sunk their teeth into the depths of Oblivion, the Dark Brotherhood is an assassin's guild. You have a thieves guild, Fighting Guild and Mage's Guild, so like 4 or 5 entire quest lines you can follow.
But I mean, also, aside from those pacts and things, they're like also, you can essentially start worshipping the Daedric Princes, and you can sort of join some different groups that way, get some fun stuff, do some morally questionable activities.
All right.
I don't know, yeah.
Are you content with that as your introductory summary for Oblivion?
I mean, I think so. We skimmed over the surface. Yeah. It's good.
I think we can dig into some more of the mechanics later on in the debate. But for now, we transition to the High Sheriff.
High Sheriff! That's me. Thank you for that introduction, noble speaker.
Jesus Christ.
Are you just saying that I'm a people?
Keep that up, yeah. Anyway, so Skyrim, or Elder Scrolls V, is, weirdly enough, set after Elder Scrolls IV.
How long after?
It's vaguely 200 years.
219, I think.
It's significant enough to be like, man, remember that crazy thing? Like, there's a museum.
I like how in Skyrim, they collectively refer to all the events of Oblivion as the Oblivion Crisis.
That's right.
They just summed up the whole game right there. Austin took 10 minutes, they took 3 words.
So basically, it's been 200 years after. You start off as, well, you're randomly captive again. Isn't that great? Classic storytelling. So you're on the back of this cart with a horse thief and apparently the leader of the rebellion. Not a nice place to be if you're not part of the rebellion. Basically, you're set in Skyrim this time, which has been mentioned in the Elder Scroll games.
Skyrim is the province directly north of Cyrodiil, where Oblivion took place.
So basically, Skyrim currently is the home of the Nords and is now in a civil war. And you kind of are apparently caught up in a border crossing. And so you start off as like about to be executed when all of a sudden a dragon comes and that kind of distracts people long enough for you to get away.
Kind of distracts. It's a whole fucking action set piece. Kind of distracts.
Also, you didn't mention the best part.
What? The fact that you're with Ulfric Stormcloak?
No. The part where you get captured and then they're about to like get you executed and then you start changing races and colors and facial features right in front of everyone and they don't question it at all.
And they're all really cool with it. But yeah, so that's like your customization. And just like in Oblivion, you can choose to be a variety of different race. You don't choose a class. That part was done away with though. You move on, and like I said, a dragon attacks, and dragons hadn't been seen in Tamriel in thousands of years, and this was, like, the first sighting, to the point where they're not even sure if, like, it really was a dragon that attacked.
What in Oblivion is that?
They're, like, climate change deniers, like a dragon is breathing fire on their face. It's like, no, dragons don't exist. Remember, they all died.
It must have been the wind.
Basically. So you make it out, but what's important to note is that there's an ongoing civil war between the Stormcloaks, which are a more like nativist kind of movement of Nords who want to force the Empire and their controlling government, the Altmeri Dominion, which are High Elves and Dumer. The Wood Elves are also part of the Altmeri Dominion, right?
Yeah, the Bosmer. The Wood Elves are the Bosmer, yes.
Oh, Bosmer.
Mm-hmm. Dunmer or Dark Elves?
Or Dark Elves.
Oh, that's what Dunmer. Okay. I get them mixed up because, like, they try to mention them, but then they go right back to saying, like, blank elf, and I'm like, all right, that's easier. And then, like, the Empire is obviously, you know, trying to keep control of the Skyrim colony. That's, like, the second biggest plotline. What the biggest plotline is that you were revealed to be the Dragonborn.
The climate change born.
A man.
Or a woman.
With the body of a person. But the soul of a Dova, which means dragon in dragon. So you're the Dovahkiin, and you can, like, speak dragon, which apparently is, like, literally shouting and blowing fire and, like, ice and saying words so mean they, like, cause people to lose armor points, which just, like, those are words. Words hurt, guys. So your whole quest is to stop this evil dragon, which is called, like, the World Eater. He wants to, like, eat all the souls in heaven and then, like, kill everyone on Earth. It's kind of ridiculous, but it's, you know, it's Elder Scroll life.
How you do.
Yeah. And, of course, there's all, like, the other major, like, a lot of the major organizations from Oblivion are also carried over to Skyrim, like yeah. the Dark Brotherhood and the
Thieves Guild.
It's like the Mages College is also like a thing.
The College of Winterhold replaces the Mages Guild. The Companions replace the Fighters Guild.
Yeah, it's the College of Winterhold. It's like there used to be Yale, and then like half of Yale fell into the ocean. And so now there's just a bunch of people angry at Yale College.
I think it's a little less extreme than that, because Winterhold
no,
is actually...
No, I think it is, because they talk okay. about Winterhold being, like, one of the biggest holds, and then there's, like, yeah, now it's three houses, one of which is burned down.
See, Keenan, though, I'm just saying that, like, Yale is not quite in the position where it could conceivably fall into the ocean. Well, I guess... It's,
well, I mean, apparently Winterhold wasn't.
Have you seen San Andreas?
The college was supposed to be centered within the center of town.
Listen, The Rock is running for president. San Andreas could happen.
Jesus.
So, Keenan, while we do still have a couple minutes left in your thing, I want to ask you the same question as Austin. When you go to play Skyrim and you get past that introductory distracting dragon, as you reductively put it, when you actually get into the game
and start dragon.
That pesky dragon, what is the thing that you love to do most? What's the thing?
I would have to say what I personally, my perfect Skyrim, really, is I like to go as far north as possible to where, like, the really snowy things happen and just, like, murder people. However, my favorite quest, though, that I have to do is in Windhelm, which is the seat of the Stormcloak government.
Rebellion.
Well, I mean, depends on who you're talking to.
You're talking to me, motherfucker.
I'm not a Stormcloak guy, though, just so you know. However, there is a murder mystery where you actually have to solve the mystery. It's called Blood on the Ice. It's one of my favorite quests.
I remember that
basically,
quest. Oh,
I get to be High Sheriff in-game and be a super sleuth.
I did not like that quest.
No, Colin, have you not heard? He made a whole character file for a battle mage detective, Andrea Graves.
Yo, I didn't hear about this.
Yes, Detective Andrea Graves. The opening is perfect for this, because, like, you're in the cart, right? With a horse thief and Ulfric Stormcloak, right?
You're in the horse cart with Ulfric and the other guy.
So, like, I'm in there, and I'm like, Andrea Graves, Cyrodiil PD, because I'm an Imperial, right? I'm like, this perp, the horse thief, is my perp. He's leading me back to a larger ring of horse thieves. You guys walked into a major ongoing investigation. And then the horse thief tries to run away, and he's shot by the Imperials, because they're like, aren't the Imperials bad guys? And I'm like, whoa, what's happening? They're like, put him to the block. I'm like, whoa, you can't put me to the block. I demand to speak to your commanding officer. So then first thing I do is I learn the fireball spell. And that's my gun. And then I find Lydia, who's the house Carl at White Room, and she's my sassy cop partner. I try to do the Blood on the Ice, and I also try to do the Skooma Buster one, where you go to Lipton, and, like, you have to bust a drug thing. I'm like, busting, I'm like, this is a sting! Cyrodiil PD! It's by far one of my favorite characters I've ever played. It was at the point where, like, you know how to do a lot in a game, and, like, you're so bored taking everything seriously, you make, like, a joke character that ends up being, like, your favorite. So Detective Andrea Graves is my favorite Skyrim character.
That was amazing! Okay, man, points to Keenan for that great story. Sorry, Austin. I don't actually have points written down, but maybe I do and you should be scared.
Not to point that out.
Jesus Christ. So, Keenan, do you feel satisfied with this as the conclusion of your presentation for The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim before we begin to debate?
Before we begin to debate, I just want to say that it changes a lot in terms of initial gameplay. Like, the big thing that attracted people was, one, dragons and also dual wielding. And I'm just going to mention that now. I'll probably bring it up later.
Yep.
But you can dual wield stuff like swords and axes you can dual wield, or you can, like, dual wield double, like, fireballs. Because, you know, you're a wizard and you want things to cook quickly. You want to be the George Foreman of Skyrim. You know?
All right. Well, with that in mind, I think that we have enough of a foundational idea of these games. Using the criteria, let's jump into the debate.
Yes.
So, the debate. The debate between these people. We're going to be focusing on the criteria I selected. I've never so quickly slid out of a bad accent before. That was graceful.
Oh, you're quitting, are you?
Ah, yes! I could do, like, the... Have you guys seen Time Zero in Star Trek The Next Generation? I could do the shitty Mark Twain.
What if I do the entire Skyrim accent this entire thing?
Can you do the one that's Jim Cummings? Because I love hearing Tigger in Skyrim. I love it. He's in it all over the place. He's in the... There's one of his guys is always in the College of Winterhold. It's like, the College of Winterhold has more power than the rest of Skyrim. And I'm just like, yay! Yay, Tigger! My favorite! It's so good.
No, I'll just talk like this the whole time. Continue on, Colin.
I am Jarl Bulgroof of Whiterun. You may have the house, Carl. Do you want to buy property? No, the dragon.
Hingergergergerger.
We're gonna go down the list of criteria. So the first thing I want to talk about is the presentation of these games. So I don't know if you guys have some points you want to leave off with. I do have some questions about the presentation that I want to address, but if you guys have anything that you want to start to kick it off...
I actually have a quick question.
Yes.
And I'll start off too, but a real quick question about the graphics.
Mm-hmm.
When Oblivion came out, and I couldn't find anything really on this.
It came out in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
No. When it came out...
Thanks,
were the graphics good for the time?
Yes.
Because I actually don't know.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I mean, obviously, I would have to say that, like, Skyrim, just because it was made, you know, years later, has more advanced graphics. Like, for example, I can make a beard.
I can make a beard.
No, I mean, like, all I wanted to do was, like, give myself a scruffy kind of look, and I was like, beard. And it was like, there was no beard option. You could just make your, like, cheeks darker. And that's your beard in Oblivion. But anyway, what I really want to talk about first is the interface. While the Oblivion interface is very picturesque, it's got like a real like RPG feel for it.
It's real skeuomorphic. And then Johnny Ive came in and said, fuck skeuomorphism. We're going to go to a completely digital look. That's an Apple joke for those who are here for the ride from iOS 6 to 7.
You're a nerd.
It's okay.
Yeah, it was just, to me, it was really confusing.
Yeah.
You had to, like, move around between, I think one was weapons, one was apparel, one was spells? Was that spells and spell-like things? And then maps? Maybe.
Yeah, maps had its own thing.
Maps was, yeah.
Also, like Apple Maps and iOS 6, it didn't work.
I went to, like, go find the map, because it was like, go to this town. I'm like, oh, okay, this road sign doesn't tell me which direction the town is. And it was, like, just the immediate area. And, like, it didn't tell me how to operate any further than, like, that. I was like, okay, I guess I'll go straight through the wilderness. So I had to go straight through the wilderness to this weird city. However, in Skyrim, it is real elegant and streamlined. Basically, the map is a whole different menu, which is just one different button away. And it's a button that isn't used for anything else. So there's no way that you can lose the map.
Ah, fuck, I lost my map!
And it's labeled really well, and it's really easy to traverse. So I think in that way, the interface has one up on Oblivion, just because it was really easy to use, you can jump right into it, it's really elegant. And although, like I said, Oblivion's very picturesque, it's super confusing.
Mm-hmm. Austin, would you like to rebut?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk about all three of these subgroups here, because I think, like, you know, Skyrim has better graphics, it was made later. They both have, like, good graphics for their time,
mm-hmm.
but I think, as far as presentation goes, including graphics is, like, some of the artistic design
yes.
behind the games, and I think that the artistic design for Oblivion, with what they had, they did way better for it. Like, Bethesda with Oblivion did way better, I think, than Skyrim did, because the realism of Skyrim is... Like, it's impressive, especially with, you know, Todd Howard trying to steal all of our money by selling us the same game over and over again with slight improvements
each time.
I've
only bought it three times, Austin, okay? Calm down.
But, like, if we compare Skyrim to other games of its time, a lot of games are, like, similarly realistic. But with Oblivion, it was just when people were starting to try to make their RPGs look a lot more realistic in that way. So, like, it looks a little wonky. But it doesn't look the way that characters look silly and stylized in World of Warcraft even today. Like, they were definitely trying to do something different, and I thought It was super cool. And I just want to say that with Skyrim, I have never had the experience of seeing a stranger in the supermarket and like saying, oh my God, that's someone that I've seen before. Because in Oblivion, there are so many like random NPCs who look like kind of weird, but like you can find people who look like that. And it's weird because they're like a little stylized.
Like you just see this one person, like they clearly been fucked up from birth and their parents told them it was normal.
No, it's like everyone's lived their lives like thinking that they're normal. But no, really, you're from Cyrodiil, and you say some dumbass lines at me sometimes.
I would like to respond to that real quick. I think that you can't dismiss, in terms of artistic style, Skyrim, because what Cyrodiil is, at least through my playing and through what I've seen of it and some stuff I looked up, is that it's all kind of vaguely European. You know, it's like, there's something really, like, specific about it. However...
Specifically. Specifically.
There's nothing particular about it. Sorry, audience. However, I'll wait for you. You good?
It's okay. Just keep going.
Okay. What I was going to say is that I think what Skyrim brings to the table is, yeah, it has that realism. However, Austin, the art style of Skyrim is heavily influenced by, like, Nordic art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I think that adds to it is that while Cyrodiil is vaguely European, they got castles, and it's vaguely what you think of if someone says medieval times. However, I think that the stronger images come from Skyrim because of that really heavily influenced, unique look to the things. Mm. You know,
I know you've only been able to play the game for a few days, so you might not have noticed, because, you know, the Imperial City is definitely just like, it's supposed to be vaguely European, like big castle walls and shit. But the thing is that the different cities in Cyrodiil being the central territory of the continent, are all influenced by like their nearest neighbors. It's sort of a huge cultural hub for the for Tamriel.
It's like New York City, but without hobos fucking in the river.
So like if you go to cities in the north, you'll see like Nordic style houses. But then if you go over to Shadenhall, you'll see more Eastern Dunmer style buildings and stuff. And it's just like, if you go around, you can see the cultural influences from all these different places. So I don't think that Skyrim really has like a super leg up in terms of the creating a culture department with graphics.
I mean, I went to Burma and it's still, like I said, it still felt vaguely European. And you're right, you can say there are influences. However, I don't think that has as strong enough for it to be said that like this is a completely different art style.
All right. Now, I do have a question that I would like to ask you guys.
Sure.
Now, regarding the combat, and this is kind of moving into interaction, the combat in Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, this is touching on what you said, Keenan, it changed from Elder Scrolls Oblivion, because in Oblivion, you could have a single weapon equipped in one hand, and in your offhand, you could have like a shield or a spell or something like that. In Skyrim, you have the ability to freely assign whatever you want to either hand, which allows you to dual wield weapons and combine spells.
Dual shield.
Dual shield. You are super safe. I think a lot of people really latched on to this multi-weapon approach versus Oblivion's one-item approach. Now, do either of you feel one is superior to the other in terms of execution or maybe style or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say that one, dual-wielding in itself allows for a lot of different combinations and more versatility because you can mix and match magic, you can mix and match your weapons, you can and shields, and then you can mix and match weapons and magic, right? But also, I think the really big stride is that the Skyrim combat system allows more versatility and adapts to the player because they got rid of the class system, which I would argue limited you, that you pick knight at the beginning, you can only really kind of be a knight through the whole thing. However, what Skyrim does, they got rid of the class system and they had a perk system. So you had all these different skills which leveled up as you use them. So the more you used a thing, the more you would be able to upgrade that. So you were able to adapt it to you. And also, it made it that if you ever questioned like what you were doing, like maybe I don't want to do heavy armor anymore, maybe I want to do more light armor, you can just switch over to light armor. You just have to work at it.
So by contrast, in Oblivion, the skill system was a bit different because you had a set of major skills, primary skills,
yep.
And leveling those is what ranked up your character, opposed to the more free form in Skyrim. Austin, what is your take on how those differences affect the game?
Yeah, I mean, in Oblivion, definitely you have to choose what you you have to you can implement some planning to choose like what you want to do with your character at the start of the game. Like, you don't have to choose the knight class. You can build your own class. And, you know, on your first playthrough, you're not going to do that because you're like, what the fuck is going on? I don't know. However, like, it does offer a lot of like versatility in that you can try out any number of characters if you want to keep playing the game. It's super cool, I think. It allows for like very extreme specialization, or you can play characters that are super general, that aren't like really good at any one thing, but they can make do with anything. And I think though that what Skyrim did to polish its combat, it lost out in some other arenas because like
to the arena.
Well, yeah, that. But something that I really missed as a player when I went into Skyrim was being able to do so much like persuasion and like funky things with illusions and like getting people to give you what you want without actually having to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Bargaining is a fun thing. I think that Skyrim really polished the combat, but like they just dropped a bunch of things that you mm-hmm. could do in Oblivion to like persuade people to let you do things without having to do a quest for them or give them something in return, pay them as much money as they perhaps would like, etc.
To get 100% chameleon spell, whack them with a sword, and have them not know you're doing it.
Or, my personal favorite, to get the 100% chameleon enchantment and then summon Storm Atronach to kill everything. And so I just sneak around,
yeah,
and nobody sees me, and everybody dies.
You said that you could... Can you just switch your class in...
No.
In Oblivion? Like,
no,
you said,
can't.
Like, you could just switch, like, mid-character?
No. That's class? Not... That is not what I said. I just said, like, on different playthroughs, you can plan your character differently.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to choose one of the classes that they give you at the beginning. You can build your own.
Yeah, because what that's I can awesome. What I can say of my experience with Oblivion is that my frustration always came from the fact that once I'd picked a class, if I didn't think about something ahead of time, it could ruin my playthrough down the line. Because maybe... I want to level my acrobatics by jumping up a mountain, but that won't level up my character because I didn't choose right. Whereas in Skyrim...
Jump once, skill upgraded.
In Skyrim, you're right that it is super combat heavy, and while it's much nicer to have the freeform, the combat skills are so useful compared to like the bartering and speech skills that like by the time you're pretty deep into the game, I find that you're like an unstoppable war machine, but you're dumb as fuck, you know?
I would argue no. Because those are also skills within the game, and you can level those up just like any other skills. Mm. I think that the class system is kind of clunky. I think what the perks allow, it allows you to be an all-around character while also offering the specialization
mm-hmm.
if you seek it.
Okay, that's fair. Well, I do want to talk a little bit on the idea of interaction, the factions. So, in Skyrim, going back to Ulfric's Stormcloak,
yes.
fighting off the Imperials who are trying to take over Skyrim or keep them as part of the colony, as a colony, as part of, you know, the Empire. In Skyrim, there's a faction quest line called the Civil War, where they introduced Spider-Man a year before his own movie came out. And what did you guys think of Spider-Man's role in Civil War?
You're a nerd.
He's pretty okay, honestly.
It was
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed he was there.
Keenan, you are much less feisty than I thought you were going to be tonight. I thought you were going to be a sassy motherfucker. You are just letting me get away with everything.
Do you want me to talk about, like, the Skyrim Civil War? I'm here for serious business.
Oh, okay. It's serious business time. Now, after all these fucking episodes, now you're going to buckle down and be serious?
Yes, only now, High Sheriff. No more Mr. Nice High Sheriff. No more stays of execution.
So the Civil War quest line, you get to choose whether to fight on the side of Ulfric Stormcloak or the Imperials. That is a quest line where once you choose which side you're on in that playthrough, that's it. If you want to play through the other side of that story, you need to start a new character and do it again. To my knowledge and my experience with both games, Oblivion doesn't have something quite like that. So I guess what I would say is, Keenan, do you think that this is adding a lot to Skyrim? And Austin, do you think that Oblivion feels maybe shallower by comparison once you experience that sort of thing?
I would say, I'm going to be honest, I'm just going to make a comment real quick. I don't think that that makes Oblivion's story shallow. I enjoyed the stuff. However, I will say, though, that because it isn't just a Civil War quest, there's a bunch of other quests that actively give you a possibility and sometimes blatantly say, you know, if you do this, it could be different. Like, for example, there is the Dark Brotherhood quest, which is a major quest, which you can actually, instead of joining the Dark Brotherhood, you can actually go, like, basically be a narc. You can tell the Secret Service.
Yeah.
What?
Okay, so spoiler alert.
Austin, did you know about this?
Yeah.
I never experienced this in the game.
You're killing me, man.
What?
Colin, I'm about to blow your mind. Basically, you know, okay, yep. So you were kidnapped from your first, like, Dark Brotherhood mission, and there's an assassin going, oh, hey, you stole a kill of ours, because you did. Now you need to do one of our, like, kills. There's a contract out on one of the people in this room, and there's three people with hoods on them. And she's like, kill the one that has the contract on them. However, if you kill her, she just says, you chose correctly, or something like that. And then you get a new quest started in which you go to, like, the Emperor's personal guard. And then they're like, oh, cool. In fact, here's a whole bunch of money to go destroy the Dark Brotherhood.
I had no idea!
So you can go to the Dark Brotherhood hideout and you can just murder them all.
That's amazing!
However, I think that's the thing about the choices also, they aren't just, like, dumb choices that don't really, like, mean anything. They give you, like, both sides of the story.
Mm-hmm.
In the Civil War storyline, yes, the Imperials are, like, kind of, you know, in control and controlling Skyrim, but also the Stormcloaks are, like, huge nativists.
My ancestors are smiling at me, Imperials. Can you say the same?
They don't like foreigners and are, like, racist and stuff.
Damn elves. I bet they had something to do with this.
They're trying to put up a travel ban against people from the Imperial City.
No, more like they're trying to fucking put a travel ban against fucking Dunmer.
Yeah.
Wow, I was trying to make a topical joke, and you made it way more topical by accident.
Yeah. So there's legitimate grievances on both sides, and it's really cool to explore that, and that's just in the Civil War quest and all the other quests, there's always two sides.
Austin, in Oblivion, they don't have quite as many dual-layered things, but you speak pretty highly of some of those quest lines. Do you think there are any that do stand out quite the way Civil War did?
As far as the interaction of, like, the quest line where you can do two different paths.
Madway, the most powerful of Devour.
I think that you definitely don't have that in Oblivion, but what you do have is separate quest lines that sort of intersect with each other at various points, mm-hmm. which can create some really cool situations. If you do the arena quest line, which is essentially you join Fight Club, you get money for being a gladiator.
But in this game, everybody talks about Fight Club all the time. It is their favorite thing to do.
In fact, it's a national pastime.
There's a guy yelling, "Welcome to Fight Club!"
Anywho, there's this famous guy who's the best at baseball. And his name is Agronat Gromalog.
Agronat Gromalog!
The Grey Prince.
I love that name so much, I've never forgotten it.
It rolls off the tongue. And so, if you do the arena questline, you end up fighting a bunch of people, and eventually you have to fight Agronat Gromalog, because he is the king of the arena. What you get access to is another questline, which is to learn about Agronak's heritage, because he makes no secret of the fact that he's only half-orc, and he has royal blood. And there's this whole questline to, like, learn about his dad, who we know is...
he's full of shit.
Yeah, Agronat Gromalog's dad is Lord Leviticus. And so you eventually learn that Agronat Gromalog is the son of this dude, so you go to find the dude and talk to him. Turns out that dude's a vampire, you find a diary, you go back to Agronak and you give it to him.
Does that make our orc guy half vampire?
Yeah, he's half vampire. And when he learns that he's half vampire, he drops into despair.
Bat people, orc people, people.
Yeah, he just says, like, he wants to die and whatever, and if you kill him right there, he won't fight back. But if you don't kill him, and then after you don't kill him, you finish the arena quest line. In the arena, he will just, like, let you kill him.
Yep.
Because he doesn't want to win. And it's really sad.
Wait. You let the vampire live?
And killed him later. It's happened. I've done multiple playthroughs, Kenan. Also, he's only a half vampire. Obviously, he doesn't drink any blood because he didn't know he was a vampire until you fucking told him, so...
I think Kenan just has a problem with the principle of you not slaughtering vampires on sight.
I mean, they're vampires.
Yeah, I think that's fucking racist. anywho...
Listen, I have a whole bit about this, but we won't get into it.
Yeah, I think that in Oblivion, quests can have these really intricate plots like that. And my favorite one, which is going to have so many spoilers, the Dark Brotherhood questline. It's amazing. The characters it introduces, the tension that arises, the adventures that you have in this quest. Okay, here we go.
Oh my goodness,
okay.
Jesus Christ.
So you kill someone, right? And then while you are asleep, an emissary from the Dark Brotherhood will, this guy comes and he's like, hey, you want to fucking join us? That was pretty rad. You sleep pretty well at night for killing people all the time.
Just kill someone, bro.
And you're like, yeah. Totally, dude. I'm a dirty fucking mage assassin.
Austin and I play this game very differently.
No, but you start by this character, your supervisor, Lucien Lachance. Amazing guy. Great dude. I mean,
you call him a supervisor, I'm imagining you in an office setting and Lucien being the boss from Office Space, just being like, if you could kill like 10 more princes, that'd be great.
Yeah, so he tells you that you have to go to this particular hideout for the Dark Brotherhood, and you have to cleanse it. So you have to go in there and murder everyone. So then you do that, and then he's like, oh man, you're pretty legit. You killed them all. And you're just like, yeah, I did. And then he starts like giving you different like quests, so you have to kill a bunch of people. But then Lucien starts telling you that like there's someone who's been targeting members of the Dark Brotherhood and killing them. And you're like, oh shit, that sounds serious.
Who could that be?
When can I get to the level where I can avenge these assassins that are part of my brotherhood, right? And so then it is revealed slowly that someone's been intercepting Lucien Lachance's drops and switching them and having you target members of the Dark Brotherhood that you've been killing.
Shit.
And you're like, oh shit, what's going on? And then there's this huge climax and Lucien Lachance gets killed and you're like, no, and you avenge him and then you're in charge of the Dark Brotherhood and everything's crazy. You get to talk to the Night Mother. It's cool.
You do that in Skyrim.
So I think that we've done a good job of running through all the criteria in some respect.
Oh wait, real quick, is it okay if I say something about the quests in general?
Yeah.
The one thing I just wanted to say is that one of the things I liked about Skyrim as opposed to Oblivion is that Skyrim felt like there was a lot more to do. Apparently I trekked through the wilderness and on roads from the Imperial City all the way to the other side of Cyrodiil, and then I did it again all the way to the north.
To the northern north.
And I didn't really come across any, like, random interactions.
There is a system in Skyrim called Radiant Questing, where people will approach you with random little fetch quests or side missions. That system was built for Skyrim, and it carries over to Fallout 4. But that is something that is not present in Oblivion at all.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that, one, the random interactions allow the world to be really alive because random things happen sometimes. But I also want to say that I think that it feels like there's a lot more to do in Skyrim quest-wise, because I would get random stuff walking through and I didn't just have to do what felt like the main quest.
Well,
and through Oblivion, I felt like I could only really do the main quest. I felt like something that Oblivion didn't have was that variety of quests.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really feel like there was anything else for me to do besides the main quest.
So, okay. I think I'm going to wrap up our debate now.
Okay. There's so many more things, though. Tone. Themes.
Thank you for that, unfortunately, much more civil debate than I expected. Much less of a bloody affair than I thought.
I forgot my gun, you know.
Oh, can we re-record this where Keenan has a gun?
I mean, we could just add in gun sound effects, but it's not like we're in the same place.
Bullets go far, Austin.
You come by the office of the High Sheriff. I'll have, like, my four main guys around me and a gun on the table. And we'll record like that, and I'm sure the conversation will be the same, right? It's just, I don't see the point. What's the difference, huh, between me having threat of death on my side and you having your argument? It should be the same. That's equal. That's fair.
See, I thought this was going to be different because I just always assumed that people thought he had the threat of death over them anyway.
I just thought that we all, like, technically have the threat of violence whenever we're in person anyway. Like, it's there. We could do it.
Austin, how do you view our friendships? What are you thinking about when we're in the same room? This is scary.
Colin, wait, you never, like, even subconsciously thought that? Because I do that all the time. They're called intrusive thoughts. You just think about, like, bashing someone's head in. It's not your fault.
I have intrusive thoughts, but they don't permeate all of our interactions.
Well, you know, like, it's like a Bethesda game, right?
Yeah.
You're listening to people, and they're saying things, and are you reading the text? Are you not reading the text? Do you care about this questline that much?
Yeah, do you have that quicksave ready? That's all we're saying. quick save, stab. Oh, all right. So that's why he looks like dead. Anyway, reload. Yes, tell me more about your lost sister.
So, moving on from this tame debate into this apparently bloodthirsty epilogue.
Apparently subtle implications.
The rating section is going to work a little differently because everything in this episode works a little differently. What we are going to do is have each of our representatives rate their opponent's presentation on a scale of 1 to 5 amulets of kings. The Amulet of Kings being the thing that allows them to light the dragon fires. I figured that's a nice, you know, touch point between both games. The dragon fires, the dragonborn.
I suppose.
Uriel Septim, Captain Picard was a dragonborn. Captain Picard was a dragonborn! First Contact is such a different movie now.
Yeah, but he was the fucking worst.
He died.
I mean, like, as far as being a dragonborn is concerned...
Being a dragonborn is not all about, like, yelling at stuff. It's also about being diplomatic.
Yeah, but he couldn't even do that well, because he got murdered and his kingdom fell apart.
Yeah.
All right. So, Austin, I would like you to rate on a scale of 1 to 5 Amulets of Kings, The Elder Scrolls V, Skyrim.
I think I'd give Skyrim 3 out of 5 Amulets of the Kings. Because, like... In any particular moment while you're playing Skyrim, I'm sure, like, it's going to be, like, a nice experience. And, like, you can have a lot of fun fighting stuff. You'll see, like, cool scenes of executions and things. And you can really easily find all the quest lines and stuff. That's pretty much what I think the motif of Skyrim was that they made it, everything was more accessible, more instant gratification, and you could just play the game. You don't have to do any stupid bullshit to get there. But I think that for that, they lost a lot of what made the other Elder Scrolls games, like mostly Morrowind and Oblivion, so cool. In that, like, they had this atmosphere of... a world that you were in. So, like, it's a fun game, but I don't think it's, like, a great game. And I definitely don't think that Todd Howard should still be trying to fucking milk money out of it.
I'm with you there on the Todd Howard thing.
Fuck Todd Howard. Can that be the name of this episode? Fuck Todd Howard?
Oblivion v. Skyrim, fuck Todd Howard?
Yes.
All right, so, Keenan, what do you think of Oblivion? 1 to 5 Amulets of Kings.
I would also give it 3. I do appreciate that the graphics were good for its time. However, I would say that, like, it did feel very clunky for me to start off, and the mini menus were, to me, confusing and inaccessible.
The mini menus and the people.
And not really user-friendly. But I just felt that, despite being in an open world, that Oblivion wasn't as, like, open as I would like. Yeah, sure, you could say you have to go find stuff, but, you know... I felt like there wasn't really anything else to do besides the main quest and a few other ones I was maybe prompted with, but only through the main quest.
All right, well, that's fair. Well, thank you both for putting aside your differences.
Gun still on the table.
And doing exactly what I told you to do.
Really?
So I am going to select a winner of this debate. This is equivalent to our typical Gold Star Student Award.
Oh, wait, what do we get? Because we don't get the Amulet of Kings.
No, you don't. I'm going to get there. Don't you worry.
Okay.
I am going to award the Golden Wabbajack.
Oh, shit.
The mystical staff of Shea-Gorath that changes anything it strikes into a random creature or item.
I killed a demon with a chicken.
I figured it is wild and crazy enough, and in both games, so I figured you may both appreciate it.
Yeah, it is in the other one, yeah.
So, I would like to give you each 30 seconds, and I have a stopwatch, I'm 30 seconds and cutting you off. I'm gonna give you each 30 seconds for a final statement, okay? So, sum up your arguments as best as you can, and I will render my verdict. Austin, 30 seconds, 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, well, I think that Oblivion is better than Skyrim because basically what Skyrim did to improve upon Oblivion, with air quotes, was that it made a lot of the stuff more accessible to a wider audience so that it could be, like, easier for more people to play. You didn't have to be as into RPGs or anything, so it made a lot of things simplified. And I think what it did was it cut out a lot of what made Oblivion such a deep, amazing RPG. It also, I don't think it has as good of a quest line, storylines for, like, any quest, and it introduces fake things.
Cool.
ethical shit.
So, for anybody listening, that was not fast-forwarded. That was Austin. Let's move to Keenan. Keenan, your final argument. 30 seconds on the clock in 3, 2, 1, go.
Skyrim improves upon gameplay by removing clunky options and streamlining others. While the additions of perks and dual-wielding allow the game to adapt to you, the addition of dragons and shadows are a fun tool as well as add classic fantasy enemy. The art style makes the locations feel unique and the graphics create a beautiful scene that further immerses the players. The story and lore continue the Elder Scrolls condition of well-written and compelling stories which still inspire active fan-based discussions of the game. The game is also not with any sort of activities and quests to do along with random events that make the world feel active and alive, while making it more accessible to new players.
Did you just quote Todd Howard at E3?
No, that was basically what I in my notes, I was like, all right.
Oh, yeah, I know. I just...
Oof. I wrote a bunch of notes.
Yeah, wow, okay. Excellent. Succinctly done, you guys. We can cut out most of the rest of the podcast now and just do that. So, I need to render a verdict. And to be honest, those final arguments actually did just give me some more stuff to consider in terms of how you presented your arguments. So I think that the winner of this debate, the person who best represented our criteria of presentation, interaction, and imagination in all its forms, and who painted, I think, the clearest picture for me, who is right in the middle of enjoying both these games the most, I am leaning toward the argument of one Mr. Austin Liebers, to whom I am going to award the Golden Wabbajack.
Colin, you clearly like Oblivion better. I don't believe that I could possibly win with this biased judge. However, I will say, though, that I agree with Austin, but Jeffrey, you are a really cool and noble editor and a perfect man, body, and soul. You're a nerd.
So, Keenan, I actually would like to say that some of your arguments about the world feeling alive did grant a level of depth to your argument that I appreciated. That actually did bolster your argument very strongly for me, especially in your closing statement. Austin, I believe I'm going to award the Golden Wabbajack to because I felt a little more compelled by some of the deep pulls you made out of the game. Comparing your passionate retelling of the Dark Brotherhood was a little more compelling to me of the quality of the game than... Sheriff Keenan of Skyrim.
God damn it.
And what is Angela Graves?
Fair.
Not that it hurt your presentation, Keenan. It was thoroughly enjoyable. But I don't think it necessarily speaks to the quality of the game. So, Austin, congratulations on your first Gold Star student. Hard won and well fought.
My friends, we have a winner. Behold, the combatant from the blue team. If you bet on the blue team, see the gatekeeper to collect your winnings.
So, with that said, I believe that is going to conclude our first Versus episode of the Common Geeking program. I apologize to the only person who's going to know how long this is, editing it, Jeffrey Levitt. As for our listeners, I want to thank you for tuning in. My name is Colin, and this week's topic was Oblivion v. Skyrim. You can check it out on your Xbox, your PlayStation, your PC. And if you want to play Morrowind, get the fuck out of this episode. We'll talk about Morrowind later.
Play Valenwood, the best Oblivion game.
Oblivion game. Okay, you're making me feel good that I made you lose. So, our next episode will be hosted by...
It's me?
It's you. You're back again, kids.
Oh, it's me. Oh, fuck.
So, Austin's hosting episode 31. What are you talking about, boyo?
Oh, well... we're going to be talking about collaborative gaming, and to introduce us to this concept, well, to get our juices flowing, our creative juices, as we come together to create something.
Creative juices as we come together.
Yeah. We need to get a little lubed up, you know? we're going to be listening to some of The Adventure Zone, a podcast by the McElroy brothers. It's going to be a great time.
Where can you find it?
You can find that on MaximumFun.com. Is it a .com website?
.org. MaximumFun.org.
You can find it at MaximumFun.org. And, you know, The Adventure Zone. It's a great time.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Be sure to read up on The Adventure Zone. Honestly, if you liked any of the stuff we talked about in this episode, you're going to have a blast with The Adventure Zone. now, if any of you listening want to contact us instead of the McElroy brothers, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave a review. We're on Stitcher, too. So if you found us there, and I know a couple of you have, leave a review there as well. Reviews actually increase visibility in these places that we would really... appreciate. It is also great if you just tell people to listen to the podcast. I want to remind people that we are still having a raffle So if you share the post that we make on Facebook, which has links to all of our hosting sites, you get a chance to pick a topic for a future episode. And whoever wins that raffle after episode 32, that is when this ends, will reach out to you. If you want to know more about any of this, go to commongeekingprogram.com.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Colin Ketchin, joined by Austin Liebers and Keenan Kodish. This episode is sponsored by editing down roughly 2 hours of recorded content, because fuck the editor, right? The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like this show, follow us, tell your friends, or leave a review. We hope you tune in for our next episode on August 11th, and thank you for listening to this.
I have intrusive thoughts, but they don't permeate all of our interactions.
Well, it's fair. It's just, it's always there. We are physical beings. Austin, stop being a weirdo. I think you're being a weirdo, you wimp.
Because...
Okay. I can't accept your defense of me on principle.
But I'm saying the same thing you are. Well, I mean,
thanks for recording that, Jeff. Our listeners are gonna love hearing you say that.
Well, I mean, whatever. We'll just edit this whole part out.